Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, AFR. Appreciate you listening. Joining me in studio this morning is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Christopher Woodward.
Good morning.
Chris, did your mom got mad at you? What were you called?
Christopher. Christopher John.
Why is it?
Why is it when parents get upset with
get the
their
full
children,
name?
You get the full name?
Listen, I was Edward Michael when I was in trouble. Well, it was up in New England, so it was Edward Michael. And I knew I was in trouble.
Right. That is a tip-off.
Yeah, because it's so formal.
Yeah.
Your mom is
right.
That loving person
right.
In your life.
Right.
You know.
Gives you hugs.
Band-aid
your lunch
on the
for
knee.
School.
Yeah. And when you get the formal treatment, you know you're in trouble.
Yes.
Like getting called before a judge.
My middle name, John, was my dad's first name. And sometimes when I did something really, really bad, my mom would say, Christopher John David, which was my dad's middle name. So like I was like, and I've done it now.
You got to the double middle name treatment.
All right. Listen, folks, at the bottom of the hour, Jenna Ellis will be with us, host of the Jenna Ellis in the Morning program. And then Dr. Alex McFarlane, co-host of Exploring the Word, will be with us at 10:45. So I'm just saying, if Tim and Ed
don't cut it,
that we've invited guests on this hour so that you can listen to them.
That's right.
Give them
Jenna
a shot.
Jenna and Alex, mm-hmm. Far better. Just all you got to do is hang in there, folks, for another 23 minutes.
Yeah. All right, if you want to watch on Facebook, go to Facebook Live and type in Today's Issues. Facebook Live, type in Today's Issues, and you can watch the show there. We also post the stories that we talk about there on our Facebook page. We have our own live video streaming service for most of our programs here on AFR, at least throughout the weekday.
We absolutely do.
What is that, Ed?
Streaming.afa.net. We have a live video stream for most of our talk radio programming. Now, I don't think you can watch the podcast in video form, but we do have the live video stream. If you want to listen to the program, if you miss one, you go to AFR.net. We have a podcast tab at the top and a drop-down menu. You find your favorite program, which, of course, is going to be Today's Issues. And then you can listen to a program that you have missed or even a segment that looks interesting to you.
Chris.
Yes.
Story number one is what, Chris?
Huge story. And I have just shared this link on our Facebook page. Members of the House Judiciary Committee heard this morning how the FBI's vast resources have been used not only against former President Donald Trump, but against average Americans. Whistleblowers were telling Jim Jordan and other Republicans on the committee about the FBI spying on Roman Catholics and targeting parents at school board meetings, even talking about how the FBI and the DOJ has been unfairly treating them since they came forward as whistleblowers. Democrats, of course, say this is a bunch of malarkey, and Republicans are just mad about how the DOJ hasn't done anything involving J6 or January 6th. I've got a good bit of audio here to bring in, and we can do this throughout the show if you want. But let's begin here with Representative Jim Jordan, who chairs the House Judiciary Committee, talking about the whistleblowers coming forward with information and the things they've been told by their employers. Clip one.
If you're one of these folks willing to come forward and talk about what's going on out there, you get attacked. They will try to crush you. And today we will hear from three of those individuals. We have talked to over two dozen whistleblowers. We have interviewed several of those individuals, and three of them are willing to come forward today and testify in our hearing. You all have a report that outlines what we've uncovered, what these whistleblowers have brought to us. And today, as I said, you're going to get to hear from three of them. You will hear how they come and talked about those very things I just mentioned, the school board's issue, the Catholic memo, this effort to inflate and make every case seem as if it's some domestic violent extremism case. But you'll also hear about how the FBI retaliated against these guys.
Now, one of those guys is a guy named Stephen Friend, who works at the FBI, and he talked about...
He still works there?
Still works there, as
of
right now.
He's a whistleblower?
Mm-hmm. Talking about J6, clip two.
In August 2022, I made protected whistleblower disclosures to my immediate supervisor, assistant special agents in charge, and special agent in charge about my concerns regarding January 6 investigations assigned to my office. I believed our departures from case management rules established in the FBI's Domestic Investigations and Operations Guide could have undermined potentially righteous prosecutions and may have been part of an effort to inflate the FBI's statistics on domestic extremism. I also voiced concerns that the FBI's use of SWAT and large-scale arrest operations to apprehend suspects who were accused of nonviolent crimes and misdemeanors represented by counsel and who pledged to cooperate with the federal authorities in the event of criminal charges created an unnecessary risk to FBI personnel and public safety. At each level of my chain of command, leadership cautioned that despite my exemplary work performance, whistleblowing placed my otherwise bright future with the FBI at risk.
Now, legally, they're not supposed to retaliate. Mm-hmm. That's across the board within the federal government. There is supposed to be special protection for whistleblowers because the idea is you want people feeling free to come forward and report their concerns about illegal activity or unethical activity without fear of retribution. So the fact is these whistleblowers have been retaliated. This is their claim. Mm-hmm. They have been retaliated against. Now, the FBI, my understanding is what the FBI is saying, no, that's not why these people were punished, with the whistleblowers. It's for other reasons, but that's what the hearing is supposed to be about.
I have to say I'm a little bit skeptical of the FBI's claims because this is one of many negative stories that we've had to bring on this show based on things that people have said the FBI or the DOJ at large has done against them or to them based on their activities. And also, we're Americans and we've never really liked government telling us what we can or cannot do. So that's probably a little bit of an influence of why I said what I did. But like I said, we've talked about it before on this show, the FBI doing all kinds of stuff and the media not doing anything about it. Therefore, you have to listen to what Jim Jordan and other people are saying.
I highly respect Jim Jordan.
Yeah, me too.
And that guy's got a tough job, and just bless him because he has a lot of pressure on him as well. He is from Ohio. Maybe we'll try to get an interview with him sometime on his free time. Right? He is just doing a bang-up job. I think, in exposing a lot of this misbehavior, and that's a light word to use, by the federal government. Listen, we can't tolerate the use of the government to intimidate and, what other word would you use, harass?
Right.
People, citizens, for political reasons.
And that's true. This should be a bipartisan issue. That is true. I would not support the FBI. If a Republican is elected in 2024, I would not approve of the FBI then being turned against Republican political opponents.
You mean Oh, yeah.
You know, Democrats. Yeah. Because it's wrong. These agencies, especially the FBI, that has so much power, so much authority, they have to follow the law, and they have to follow the regulations and the standards of behavior that have been in place. Now, obviously, abuses occur, but we cannot have Mark Houck, we've mentioned his name numerous times. He is the pro-life.
Some of his testimony yesterday.
From yesterday. You have the FBI and other law enforcement showing up at the house of a man who was simply praying down the sidewalk at an abortion clinic with rifles drawn, weapons drawn, with seven kids in the house. That cannot happen. And to your point, Chris, the fact that this is appearing to happen more and more frequently makes me believe the whistleblowers and not the FBI. And you know what? That is the fault. The fact that I and others don't believe what the FBI is saying, that's their fault. because they are on the verge of ruining public trust in a institution that needs the trust of the American people.
Don't forget what happened last week. We talked about it on this program, and I think we're still waiting for our compliance on the part of the FBI on this. But remember, the House of Representatives, the Oversight Committee, the gentleman's name, who's the chairman of that?
James Comer.
James Comer.
Yeah, Kentucky.
James Comer, Congressman James Comer, subpoenaed the FBI to turn over documents. They cited specific documents that the FBI is in possession of, which the FBI says, yes, we are in possession of. Subpoenaed the FBI to turn that over to the House of Representatives, to proper authorities there, because they have oversight of the FBI, and they have authority over the FBI, quite frankly, in the sense that we have a constitutional system of executive, legislative, and judicial.
Checks and balances, baby.
Checks and balances. And here, the FBI, the subpoena was regarding documents that had to do with the Biden family making a lot of money.
Millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars while Biden was VP.
Right.
And the FBI said last week, they sent a letter in response to the, a six-page letter, I think, in response to the subpoena. It's basically, I'm going to boil it down here. They said to the House of Representatives, we're not giving it to you.
Yeah.
How you like them apples?
Right.
So, and Kevin McCarthy at the time said, I'm going to have a man-to-man phone conversation with the FBI director, Christopher Wray, about this. Basically, what I got from him was, I'm going to tell him, you better go ahead and comply with the subpoena, or we're, I don't know what or else means,
right.
But that's basically what he told him. Then I think that since that happened last week, Kevin McCarthy's been all wrapped up in the
debt ceiling
debate and discussions with Biden, so. I haven't heard him comment. That's been all in the news. I haven't heard Kevin McCarthy or Comer comment since then, since last week, about what they told the FBI.
Right.
But I'm just saying that, the FBI basically said, well, we can't hand it over to you because there's confidential sources in this information, yada, 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 yada. And I want to know, well, if that's true, did the FBI volunteer to bring the documents over to the House of Representatives and let them look at it, you know what I'm saying, and let them see what they want to see, or, you know, some kind of accommodation to have access to the information, because if the FBI can just always say there's some reason why we don't want to comply with a subpoena, or we don't want, you know what I'm saying,
yeah,
then they can make up anything.
Right.
And
you wouldn't be able to double check because you can't gain access to the material.
Right. To me, that's not an excuse. That's not a to me, there's no reason why the FBI shouldn't have to comply with a legal subpoena from the House of Representatives.
To me, here's my suspicion, okay? And again, you don't want people to be suspicious, then you need to be upfront. There needs to be transparency. You need to follow the laws and the rules, regulations regarding FBI behavior. It makes me think that this letter, this document that allegedly shows it lays out an alleged criminal scheme involving President Biden and the Biden family and foreign nationals. It makes me think that the evidence in the document is strong enough that if Congress, this oversight committee, got a hold of it, they would then be able to demand that the Department of Justice investigate it. And the Department of Justice, which has just about been given over to complete politicization, doesn't want to investigate it because they are in the business of defending the President of the United States.
That's the appearance.
That's the appearance.
So you want to do away with that appearance? comply with the subpoena.
Comply with the subpoena, legally issued, and if there truly is information in there that they don't want to risk making public,
right.
There is a mechanism for members of Congress in this oversight
right.
committee to view it in a secure location so that nobody can take pictures of it or in any right. other way release it.
Yeah. Right. Also, it's probably a good idea not to mess with the chamber of Congress that controls funding and therefore your paycheck. The Chamber of Congress. The House controls the purse strings.
Oh, the right. Chamber of Congress.
The Chamber of Congress.
I thought you said Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin McCarthy could very well call.
I tell you what, you start weaponizing the Chamber of Commerce against people in this country, you're going to see a revolt.
That's yeah. right.
Huh?
Be money going everywhere.
Nothing's uglier than seeing a weaponized Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. Chamber of
All right, next story.
Well, I do want to play this real quick. To Ed and your point here about how things are becoming
politicized. They were good ones, too.
They were.
Yes, they were. To your point here, we're going to hear now from Representative Harriet Hagman of Wyoming, the representative that replaced Liz Cheney. Listen to what she has to say about the FBI and the DOJ going after people and becoming more political. Clip 4.
They've targeted parents for wanting to protect their children. And what we can say in short is that the eye of Soren has turned inward, and it is burning with a white-hot intensity that seeks to destroy everything in its path. What I think we can say is that as the DOJ and FBI have become more political, they have amassed more power. And as they have amassed more power, they have become more political. This is a vicious cycle that must be stopped.
Before we go
on, that?
It was Representative Harriet Hagman, if I'm saying her last name correctly, of Wyoming. Real quick, I have posted the link to the C-SPAN video of this. So if you are listening to this show and you want to watch what we've been talking about from the beginning, which was a couple of hours ago, you can do so. Go to our Facebook page, look for the link. I've also put it in the comments.
And we certainly recommend that you start watching that at 11:30 when this program's over.
Yes.
You don't want to miss a moment.
Otherwise, I will politicize the Chamber of Commerce, and we will send them to your house.
You won't like that.
Yes.
You won't like that one bit.
They're going to come after you with bitcoins. All right. One of you guys talked about how...
I'm not even sure what the Chamber of Commerce does, really, but...
They commerce your chambers.
Oh, yep. Well, they're, all right. Yeah. Who wants that to happen?
They count money.
Yeah. All right.
I think the Chamber of Commerce, don't they like... Don't they like help break, try to bring business
yes,
to your community?
I think so. I was just kidding about
that. They do.
That's their job.
Yeah.
And they have chapters all over the country.
They have nice lunches.
Yeah. All right. What?
If you do listen to this show and you work for the chamber, thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Yes. Speaking of presidential politics, you guys talked about how it's going to take another administration to try to bring some sanity back to this issue here. The list of presidential candidates on the Republican side may be growing in the next
good.
Few days. And I say that because Fox News has this headline, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis expected to launch 2024 presidential campaign next week. According to Fox, he is expected to file paperwork with the Federal Election Commission and possibly even speak in New Hampshire at some point very soon. So I'm going to share this link as well.
I was reading where is Mike Pence, former vice president, is he also going to run?
It's been hinted. I don't know that he is actually.
I'm trying to read where.
I don't even think he's got an exploratory committee. Does
according to NPR, Pence supporters announced super PAC to fund presidential bid. That's from 2 days ago.
Okay. That doesn't mean he hasn't announced.
There's people pushing him to run or wanting him to run, whereas the difference.
Okay.
With
according to Fox News, former Vice President Mike Pence is expected to declare his candidacy in the coming weeks. And former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who ran for. I have a good news radio voice right there?
Excellent.
Yeah, okay.
That was excellent.
Chris Christie, who ran for the 2016 GOP presidential nomination. Oh, and there's more. Governors Doug Burgum of North Dakota and Chris Sununu of New Hampshire are also seriously mulling the White House.
This will be a probably 15 candidate field at
they
some point.
They can't have all those people on a debate.
Oh, they've done it before. In 2016, we had so many Republican candidates that we had two nights of debates.
I remember that.
And I sat through every one of those.
You had the A team and the B team.
Yeah.
Huh? The B team debate.
They went by your polling numbers,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah, they went by your polling numbers. I think the Republican Party itself gets to decide who's on a debate stage, and I do think they base it on how much polling, whatever polls they cite.
Right.
They'll say, okay, you have to have a certain threshold to be on the stage.
Which makes it difficult for a dark horse to break through. And by dark horse, I don't know where the term originated, probably from horse racing, but somebody who's less well known, who comes from the back of the pack to become a contender.
Yeah.
That's what they call a dark horse. It makes it very difficult for you to do that if they shuffle all the people with low poll numbers to a different debate.
Yeah, but I understand why you have to do that, because can just anybody announce they're running for president and say, I demand I be on a debate stage? I mean, you could have 50 people up there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
If everybody, and a lot of these folks, quite frankly, they have a particular issue they want to push, or they want to get clicks on their website, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they don't have any legitimate chance at all,
right,
to be a nominee.
I'm kind of surprised Chris Christie is running again.
He had
that very successful show, Jersey Shore, you know, that I don't know why he wants to leave that behind.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to go into the bridge building business myself.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that.
You remember that?
Yeah, that's hard to believe. That was seven years ago.
That was a scandal for his administration, something about, I've forgotten the whole story.
But anyway.
You wouldn't get the joke I just gave if you didn't remember that. But this story just says, and former, talking about Mike Pence, is expected to declare his candidacy. It says, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who are seriously mulling White House.
There's no other way to mull.
Seriously. You know, I've talked to several people who I'm sorry, I didn't.
Did I interrupt
your punchline?
No, I thought that was a pretty humorous comment.
You want to repeat it, or does it not work the second time around?
It's not really worth
the second time. What I said was,
is there any other way to mull than to do it seriously?
Oh. Yeah, nobody mulls.
Not that I say it out loud.
Who mulls unseriously?
Yes.
I mean, really.
That's my point.
Yes.
That's my point.
So
the field's going to get crowded.
Yeah.
Probably in short order, especially if Governor DeSantis announces next week, which is what Chris is saying.
Yes.
The speculation is, then if you want a shot, you're going to have to jump in.
Yeah. Now, the debate, the first Republican debate is in August.
Is it in Wisconsin?
I think that's
on Fox. And keep in mind, Trump has said, at least earlier this month, that he wasn't going to be on the Republican debate. So it might be fewer candidates than we think.
Yeah, I don't know that Trump said he wouldn't absolutely.
He said, why didn't they didn't even ask
me. I think Trump said, I'm so far ahead, I don't need to debate. Why should I go debate?
Yeah.
Okay, and I will say this. There is some truth to candidates. I say truth. There is legitimacy to, and there's historical evidence of this. At some point, candidates ignore their opponents, and one way, because you feel like you've got everything wrapped up.
Right.
And if you feel like you've got everything wrapped up, there's no point in giving, you've got nothing to gain.
Right.
Okay. By doing a debate with somebody that you're going to trounce.
Which is why the Democratic National Committee probably will not have a debate scheduled between Biden and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Marianne Williams.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. But now Biden is an incumbent.
Yes,
right.
That is
true.
Well, I got a couple other thoughts on that. We'll be back momentarily with Jenna Ellis coming up in just a minute.
Forget about Facebook.
The last 10 days, we've been banned twice. And is unbanning a word?
They put us under the ban. Christians and conservatives
don't need you, YouTube.
Banned one day. Banned again.
AFR programs are now live streaming on the AFA streaming app. Now you can get shows like Today's Issues straight from the source.
Put back on the next.
Just say unbanned.
Unbanned.
Just search AFA streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes.
The Associated Press wrote a story the other day about how Uber and Lyft drivers are using their personal vehicles to promote Christianity. In many cases, the drivers play Christian music or listen to sermons. They see their work as a sort of mobile Christian ministry, sharing the good news with their passengers. It was only a matter of time for the Freedom From Religion Foundation to hit a speed bump. They claim the drivers are discriminating against atheists, and they want Uber and Lyft to implement policies that would forbid drivers from sharing their faith. They fired off letters to both companies accusing drivers of proselytizing, missionized against their will, is how the angry atheist described it. You know, it seems to me with all the road rage on America's highways these days, even the atheist crowd would welcome a calming and inspirational presence on our roadway. There's a reason why Carrie Underwood asked Jesus to take the wheel and not an atheist. I'm Todd Starnes.
As it is written, what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, and what no human mind has conceived, the things God has prepared for those who love him. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Chris. And we're joined now by Jenna Ellis. Jenna is host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Heard live each weekday morning at AFR, 7 a.m. Central Time, from 7 to 8 Central Time. Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning. Always great to join you guys.
Now you've moved residences recently, right?
Yes, I am now in the great state of Florida, and it is sunny. But I have to tell you, as a new resident of Florida, not a fan of the yellow flies. Apparently, that's a thing. And I woke up yesterday morning with like 5 giant bug bites. Not a
yellow
fan,
flies.
But
I've never heard. What are yellow they? Flies?
I had not either. And according, to the doctor that I called into, said, "Oh yeah, this is like a thing in Florida." Told me not if you wear black. Apparently, that's more attractive to them. So apparently, they're racist. But well. So who knew? They're okay, but they result in these like giant welts. But my mom's response to this was, "Well, still better than the bugs you encounter in D.C." And I have to agree.
I have to say, as somebody that went to an agricultural and mechanical university, yellow flies are also known as Diachloris ferrugatus.
Are you I should have called you.
I had some of that at Olive Garden one day. I'm just telling you, that was not tasty.
Well, I just want to hear. I'd like to be at the table of the real estate agency in town. Jenna was that going?
Chamber of Commerce.
No, they're going. You know what? I got a customer today. Do not tell her. Do not tell her about the yellow flies, or you may lose this sale.
That's right.
I think I would have assumed the risk because there are definitely, you know, alligators, other things. I knew coming down to Florida, I might encounter some more bugs and wildlife, but it's a risk I'm willing to take to be in the free state of Florida.
I understand. Well, if you come to Mississippi in the summer or anywhere in the South, of course, you are in the South there in Florida, but we have mosquitoes the size of large birds.
They've been known to carry off small dogs.
My dad's whole family is from Texas, and okay. I remember going as a kid one time during this like apocalypse of crickets.
Yes.
And like in Colorado, where we would have the snow mounds of these piles of snow to get out of the roadway, this was literally in Texas where you had giant piles of dead crickets. And I was like, this looks like the plagues of Egypt. It was so bad.
Well, what year was that? Because there's no joke. My wife and I, we met at Bible College in Dallas, Texas. And the year we were there, they had that same thing, a plague of crickets. There were just piles of crickets everywhere. I'm sure that was before, now that I think of it, before Jenna's time.
Well,
that was back
in
81.
Yeah, that would have been a little bit before my time. This was sometime in the 90s.
Just about everybody.
Well, you know, history repeats itself with crickets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, Jenna, before we move, we've got a couple things we want to talk to you about. We were talking about the debates, singular, mm-hmm. Coming up in August between the Republican candidates for president, those who have announced. Do you know how they'll figure out a threshold to decide how many get on the stage? Because I don't know if you saw this. This article from Fox News says former Vice President Mike Pence is expected to declare his candidacy. Chris Christie, the former governor of New Jersey, may run. Governors Doug Burgum of North Dakota and Chris Sununu of New Hampshire, they're seriously considering running.
Tim Scott is still exploring.
He's exploring. What I'm saying is we're up to now 12 to 15, it seems to me, in that range.
They all run.
And do you think that they'll probably narrow it down to like 8 or 10 or 6 or 8 that you have to have like at least show that you have over 10% polling numbers according to whatever poll the Republicans use for that? Is that how you think that this is going to play out?
Well, I mean, looking back at the last really open primary in 2016, the Republican debates, I mean, there were, 18 or 19 candidates on the stage initially, a lot of them. And, how the Republicans generated that particular threshold to say, how do you actually get on the stage, was based on, I believe, initially independent donors and from a requisite number of states, and so that you had that type of support that was a little bit of an independent, not as arbitrary or manipulative metric as some polls can be. I mean, I'm one that just doesn't really trust polls very much. And so I anticipate they'll have some type of metric.
Right.
And whether they pare it down, we'll see. But I think they need to announce soon. Because, like, as listeners of my show know, I have Vivek Ramaswamy on quite frequently, and he's one that is not, you know, polling upwards of 10% in any of the polls, but he's one that does want to get on the debate stage. And so he said very openly, tell us what the threshold is so that we can figure that out. I mean, it'd be like saying, teams, go to the Super Bowl, but we're not going to let you know the rules of how to actually qualify until it's too late for you to figure out your game strategy.
Yeah, so I guess within probably the next month, we'll know what the field is exactly, because Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, perhaps next week, will announce if Mike Pence does.
And then everybody else has to get in pretty quickly after that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, it's going to be, You remember last time, what was it, in 16, when you had a, not 2016, I'm talking about the Republican debates, and then you had the A team.
Yeah.
And then you had the B team and the right. B team debates.
Yeah.
And I remember Governor Huckabee was, and Rick Santorum, Rich, yeah. former Pennsylvania, they were on the B team debates.
Yeah.
I think, and
you're just not coming back from that.
No, but right. Governor Huckabee in his good humor, you know, he was making fun of that.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that interview with him, but there was, I understand you got to have some kind of, if you're going to have, to me, if you're going to have more than six people, it kind of dilutes the purpose of the debate, because you need to have give and take. You need to have time to answer questions in some kind. At least give them 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, and the debates to me aren't even really that helpful. But, I mean, we live in such a media soundbite-dominated culture.
Right.
That's what a lot of people expect. And so candidates go into these debates basically just trying to get their talking points across and have an almost memorized 30-second right. commercial. I wish we would go back to the days of good Lincoln-Douglas-style debates where you had, you know, I'd love to see Trump and DeSantis on a stage for 4 hours just going at each other, talking. With, you know, a moderator, but actually getting into substantive policy that you're not going to see on this type of debate stage. So I just wonder how helpful any of the debates
are. Well, you got a
are.
Point. I guess in that situation, if you are, if you have any shot at contending, you just don't want to blow it, right?
Right. That's kind of the threshold. Just don't blow it. That's my goal in the debate.
Or you make a statement that goes viral, like, then candidate Trump said, I'm going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it.
That's right. What separated him from the field when he said that.
That was his campaign promise. And in fact, on that note, Steve Cortez, who was a former campaign advisor in 2016 and 2020, joined me this morning. And that was actually his number one reason why he said that he has now endorsed Governor DeSantis. He's working for the Never Back Down PAC, was because he said that Trump basically failed to fulfill that promise. And I had several people write in and say, oh, you should have corrected him. And there are miles of walls and all that. And, you know, and that's his assessment. I'm not going to, you know, my style isn't to jump in like Sean Hannity and, you know, call out people. But at the same time, I think his point was very well taken, that that really was Trump's main contention. And we don't have a completed board for whatever reason, you know, and a lot of listeners wrote in to say, well, it's because of the Democrats or it's because of this and this reason. OK, but the point is, that was what he ran on and it didn't get completed. And for people who are looking to assess this, that's a great question for Trump, is how would he then go about in a new 4-year term? Would he strategize differently in order to complete that project? And I think these are the questions that it's really important to genuinely ask candidates. Well, and you don't see stuff like that happening, like, for example, at the CNN town hall with Caitlin Collins. It was just a promotion or a promo for her new CNN show. It wasn't really to get into policy with Donald Trump. So a lot of the media stuff really doesn't matter to policy. And I think for us, and especially as Christians who want to vote for the best candidate to lead the country, we need to
lead the country.
I was
going to vote for all of them. To lead the country.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Then we need to, you know, be looking at policy and genuinely be willing, you know, to look at the differences of the candidates and focus on policy, not personality.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, we're still a long way from August. But former President Trump has, you know, thrown it out there that he may not even go to the debate because he says, I'm too far ahead in the polls.
Seemingly insurmountable numbers.
Yes. So does that change? And Ed, you said, let's say, for example, Governor DeSantis closes the gap, because the polls, again, I agree with you, Jenna, we're so early in this thing.
Right.
And polls, a lot of polls are, if my guy does good in the poll, I like that poll. If my guy does bad in the poll, I don't like that poll. It's illegitimate.
Right.
That's the way the tribal thinking has come to exist in politics. But my point is, and I do have one, that if Governor DeSantis announces and he demonstrates in, quote, the polls that he's closed the gap, let's say within 10 points of President Trump, will President Trump then say, hey, will he reconsider and say, I can't afford to have an empty spot up there on the debate stage,
right,
where I'm supposed to be.
I think he always leaves things up to negotiation. And in fact, Liz Harrington, his spokesperson, good friend of mine, she was on my show yesterday morning and in fact said that, and said that, you know, the parameters around the debates and some of these things that he wants to negotiate, we're still looking at. And so he's very much left himself open to that kind of wiggle room. And I think my take on it, even though she didn't say it this directly, and, you know, spokespeople never do, I think his big calculation is going to be the polling numbers. And we all know that Trump pays very close attention to the polls and where Ron DeSantis is actually placed. And what's interesting to me, though, when the Trump camp is saying, oh, this, the primary is just over, this is completely done, well, remember the 2016 polls, and I think that polls generally are kind of a giant bandwagon fallacy, where they're just encouraging people to say it's a foregone conclusion. But right now, Ron DeSantis has not yet even entered the race. Trump has been, we've known since the day he left office he was running for re-election. His polls, and he's kind of at his peak, where DeSantis hasn't even reached his threshold floor yet. And so the balance, I think,
potentially,
is going to be very,
right?
Yeah.
Potentially for Governor DeSantis.
Right. And so I'm very interested to see how the polls will look in, you know, 6 weeks after he announces, and what kind of other endorsements he gets. 99 of the Florida state legislators came out yesterday and endorsed him out of the about 113. So there is momentum there. And I do think Trump is still very clearly the favorite. But at the same time, it's very early.
Yeah, I said the other day that... from what I can observe by all the polls, if you look at Real Clear Politics and you try to look at everything, President Trump hovers around 50%. This is a broad generalization, folks. This is my own viewpoint, and I don't have the stats here in front of me to go detail by detail. This is a broad general observation that Trump, former President Trump, is about somewhere, I don't know, between 43% and 50%. That's 50% would be peaking, okay, of the Republican voting base. Maybe more like 45. Okay. That tells me, and this is in surveys that I've seen. Now, in Kentucky, like the one survey I saw in Kentucky, Trump's like 75. I mean, there's Jesus, and then there, and then there's Saint Peter.
Jesus is always first.
Paul, and then Trump. Yep. Trump come in about fourth. But what I'm saying is he's way far ahead. Mm-hmm. But generally, I saw the poll from Florida. I saw the poll from Georgia. And I saw the poll from, I think it was New Hampshire somewhere. Anyway, Trump was ahead in all of them, but he wasn't over the 50% threshold. So that tells me that there's at least 50% of people who vote Republican who are saying, I'm looking at other options.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't mean that Trump won't win or can't win in the Republican primaries. I'm just saying if DeSantis, for example, Jenna, I know we're getting into projections here, but if DeSantis is going to win, it doesn't help him that you have 27 people declared, everybody getting 1%, and then President Trump is able to win these winter take all primaries with, say, 42-43%.
Where I think his team is suggesting that the primary is over. Trump's team is saying that because he has, you know, he doesn't have to be above 50%, because we don't have that sort of staggered primary where, you know, you get, if nobody wins over 50%, you go to like the top three or things like that.
You mean in a state race?
I'm saying you don't have that. Right. So you don't, it is a winner take all primary with whoever gets, you know, above a certain percentage. So Trump doesn't have to get 50%, over 50%, right?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, if it's a divided field.
Correct, right. And so he's thinking there's no way that DeSantis is going to get over 42%, for example, because of the wide field. The wide field, some people and insiders in D.C. have actually suggested to me that Trump is encouraging some of these other people like Tim Scott and Nikki Haley and others to enter so that they will divide the field.
Hey,
and that's
a strategy. That's a smart move on the far
right. And that's a strategy. What I think it's really going to come down to as well is when you look at how the primaries and the dates that they're staggered, you have Iowa, New Hampshire, Ohio, Florida, South Carolina as the initial states, and a lot of candidates will drop out at certain stages.
So
it's really going to be important, not just how these candidates are polling nationally, but how they're polling in these individual states, because unfortunately, those states matter in a primary more than they do in the general election.
Yeah, I guess it was the Georgia primary. I saw again, folks, I guess everybody can cite polls or everybody can discredit polls, and I understand that. So I would just put this in for what it's worth department, okay? I'm not going to argue about what the legitimacy or illegitimacy of polls. I'm just saying the poll I saw for Georgia had Trump, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about, had Trump 42, this is among Republican voters, it was like 3 days ago or something like, Trump 42, DeSantis 34, okay? All right, so if DeSantis would benefit from, seems to me in that situation, from having a one-on-one with President Trump, because you got to think everybody who is going to be in favor of President Trump, they did so by saying I'm with President Trump. That's my 42%, which says to me 58% of people in Georgia would say I'm looking at other options, including Governor DeSantis. You see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Right. And I think that that's where when Governor DeSantis actually announces, you're going to see some of the shift in those polling numbers. And
you think it'll get closer?
I think it will get closer. And I also think that some people who are currently supporting Trump are not saying that they're willing to support DeSantis, but they will come over just because DeSantis has not yet declared, and they don't want to get out early just in case, for whatever reason, he chose not to enter the race, which is also smart.
Well, the interesting thing is here, I think if you survey supporters of President Trump, I'm talking about among Republican voters in primaries, their second choice is going to be Governor DeSantis oftentimes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so that's an interesting dynamic as well. Do you guys want to participate in the conversation?
I have a question. it's my understanding that Democrats, they don't want to, you know, they wanted to move like South Carolina on and focus on another state they seem to think is more inclusive and diverse and whatever. But Republicans.
For what, Chris?
For the presidential primary.
There's not going to be one, is there?
Well, yes. Because it still has to be, like, done, where Democrats vote and whatnot.
Yeah, but they're not going to let Kennedy on the stage with Biden.
I'm not talking about debates. I'm talking about the primary itself. So my question is, the fact that Republicans are keeping South Carolina high up early on in the sweepstakes.
Number three.
Could that win over some moderate Democrats that, you know, hey, here's a party that still cares about me in my state and our votes, whereas the other guys don't care about us anymore?
You know, I've long been not a fan of as we just talked about, kind of this scaffolded primary where, I mean, obviously each individual state can do that. And everybody has to remember that RNC and the DNC are private entities. They're not the government. And I really don't like the fact that they get to control how we get to exercise our vote in that sense. But they are the party of, you know, the ticket that then supports whoever runs as that candidate. And that's why I think we need to get away from these kind of two-party options, because then it's controlled by private organizations instead of genuinely by the electorate. So I wish that we just had the same thing like Election Day, that we had one day that everybody votes for the primary. And then that way you would have candidates go to states like my former home state of Colorado, that because it's so far down in the process, nobody cares. And and I think that's doing a real disservice to people who are affected by national politics and the federal government. So so I don't know necessarily that the placement of South Carolina is really going to be a big deal, other than people in South Carolina who know that and they're used to the voting order. What I think is going to be the most interesting part of the primary are going to be the states that have open primaries. Like, for example, the state of Texas or my former home state of Colorado, where if you are registered as unaffiliated, you can vote in either party's primary. And I know a number of people who are saying they're going to vote in the Democrat primary because they're fine with either Trump or DeSantis. And they say, hey, either one of those would be better than Biden. I'm going to vote for Robert Kennedy in the primary on the Democrat side just to try to get Biden out. And I'm very interested to see how and if that'll have an impact on their primary.
Real quick, I misspoke, listeners. I meant Iowa. They want to Dems want to start in South Carolina and look over Iowa because it's not diverse enough in their minds. So I had the wrong state there, but
I'll
still
tell
a
you
fantastic
what,
answer from Jenna.
You start rejecting the Bacon State from their rightful place as the first primary or caucus. I think that's bad karma. I'll be honest with you.
Hey, by the way, folks, we are talking to Jenna Ellis. That's the voice you've heard, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Right here on American Family Radio.
Right. Heard at 7 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio. Jenna, let me just ask you about the Democratic field, which includes Marianne Williamson, I think, who has no legitimate shot. But what do you think about the numbers that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is showing, close to 20%? Do you think that represents like the old school liberals that maybe are concerned about the radical turn of the Democratic Party? Is it just people who do not want Biden to run for re-election? Or do you think people genuinely like RFK Jr.'s positions?
I think it's all of the above. And I think it poses a real threat to the Democrats in the sense of their national leadership and the really extreme leftists who are going for all of these radical policies that the Biden administration has been enforcing and championing over Biden's administration. And, you know, these are people, and among them as well, I think some people who were disaffected Democrats that perhaps voted for Trump even in 2020 and are now in the general election and are now saying, you know, we have an opportunity with somebody who has name recognition, who harkens back to kind of the former Democrat Party of yesteryear and some of these more traditional values that they see are truly representative of the Democrat Party instead of the crazy extreme of Biden. And what I think will be the most interesting, and again, going back to kind of those unaffiliateds who may vote for Kennedy in the primary, if he has a showing in the primary of over 30%, he may end up deciding to run independent. And that may be the biggest spoiler, just like in the 1992 election when Ross Perot basically spoiled it for George H.W. Bush. And that was how Clinton was elected. That very well could happen if he decides to run independent. I think the Democrats know that, and they're having to calculate a strategy here. But then the biggest weird wrench in the whole system is, okay, what if that happens, but then we get a Governor DeSantis as the nominee and Trump decides to run independent? Now you have four people.
It could be.
And
that
would
know
be
what?
Wild.
I don't, I'm going charismatic on you. Jenna, I don't receive that. And I don't even want to consider that possibility. But
I
yeah,
think it would be wild.
It would be wild. I've said before, if for some reason Governor DeSantis wins and beats former President Trump in the primary, I don't think President Trump will run a third party because there's a lot more. You got to register in every state. You got to show a certain amount of supporters. You got to have
get your name on the ballot.
You got to get your name on the campaign set up. Even Ross Perot couldn't do that. I think he was only in like 35 states, and he declared he was running third party all along.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So there's just a lot more to it than just say, I want to run third party.
Go back and watch those debates, though, and what he had to say about NAFTA, and then think about today.
Who?
Ross Perot.
Ross Perot.
I just like the way he called Larry King's name. Larry! A giant sucking sound.
Yeah. Also before Jenna.
Hear that giant sucking sound from Mexico. Larry? Larry.
Oh, hey, I was 8 years old in 1992. Yeah. I remember 10. That election. Just couldn't
vote. We'll be back. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.